Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're live here on Crowdcast. We're live on YouTube. Interestingly, for the second week in a row, we are live on Facebook as well, that old platform. But maybe you're listening to the audio podcast later on Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon, wherever you listen to
podcasts.
You
should just name it's more. You know what I mean? Like, just name more, you know, possible
name
places.
More. Should I name more the Submariner?
Wakanda forever.
I knew it. That was a cue up. Anyway, if you are just tuning in, we have a great show for you tonight. I'm very excited about the guests that we have on the show that we haven't talked in a while. Just a quick note. Justin, sadly, is running pretty late, but hopefully he should be here halfway through the interview and really disrupt things. So that should
yeah,
be good,
or right? He could get right at the end. You know what I mean?
Either way, but I'll tell you what, it doesn't matter because we have a great guest for you. We have not talked to her, and this is, I'll note, she mentioned this, not me. She looked this up, and she's totally right. We haven't talked to her on the show since 2008, pre-podcast times. Let's bring her in right now. Cecil Castellucci,
yay!
Hello!
Hey,
welcome!
Oh my gosh, so good to see you.
You too. I mean, the last time we had such a good time at the People's Improv Theater
New
York on a couch. It was fabulous.
Yeah, yes, but... and now we're home on our own couches, which is maybe more comfortable.
Yeah.
I don't know. Could be. But you have a lot of stuff going on, though, which I'm very excited to talk about. The main reason you're here is to talk about Nikki Fixes Time Nix, which is an iHeartRadio podcast series. But before we do, I want to mention, so you have a book that came out... 3 months ago now, called Shifting Earth from Dark Horse Burger Books, which is awesome.
Oh, wow.
And we have a chef who works with us. His name is Brett Macris, aka Stray Bullet. He's a great guy. And what he does sometimes is he designs drinks for us on a weekly basis. They're very cool, very awesome. And sometimes he does it for the guests, not always. But this time he did. He actually created a guest for you. I'm going to see if I can bring up the right thing. This is a new thing. They totally changed the system here. But he created a drink called The Shifting Earth.
Oh, my God. I love it. I'm taking a picture of that.
Well, I can send it to you. But just to read it for anybody who's listening on the audio podcast, it's gin, anchor raised liqueur, dry vermouth, orange liqueur, lemon juice, agave, Peychaud's bitters, maraschino cherries, and it's based on the story Shifting Earth by Cecil Castellucci about a parallel Earth ruled by two moons. This cocktail is awesome, earthy, spicy, sweet, and sour. And give some directions there. And I made one for myself tonight.
Ooh.
Wow. That is
amazing. Very good.
Thank you, Stray Bullets.
Stray got a shout out.
Yes. But there you go. It's delicious. It's deep. A lot of stuff going on, just like in Shifting Earth, which we will talk about in a second. But first, let's talk about Nikki Fix, which is correct me if I'm wrong, it's 12 episode series. 7 episodes are out so far, as a coming out once a week. Is that correct?
Yes, that is cool. True. Yep, it's 12 episodes, and it's a young adult time travel rock and roll extravaganza that Einhorn Productions made, and it was really fun to work on. It kind of like marries a couple of the things that I like. You know, I used to be in an indie rock band in the 90s, and this takes place in the 90s.
Nice.
And I love a good time travel story, so it was fun to work
on.
Yeah,
it's great. I listened to the first couple of episodes today, and they're super, super fun. Just to give people an idea, and this might go wrong again, I'm playing with all the new bells and whistles we have here on Crowdcast.
What if you had the chance to change the past and create the future you've always dreamed of?
Tonight's Sounds the night, good. Bobby. So, how many people are RSVP'd to the show?
One.
Yeah, Nikki Fix! Woohoo! Yeah!
Hey. I'm Nikki Fix, and my first step towards my dreams of musical stardom is playing at the iconic Millennium Roller Rink in Old Bridge, New Jersey. There's only one small problem.
I just got the final word earlier today. Landlord sold the ring.
But then, something incredible happened.
Fun, different way to do time travel.
Nikki, what's going on with that guitar?
What's happening?
What was it about you? How hard was it to come up with something that felt fresh and new and different?
It's hard to hear you, Alex.
Wait, look at this.
Oh, really?
September 27th, 19th.
Okay, there we go. Wait, how about that? How about if I get rid of this thing? Any better? Oh, that's better. That's great. Haven't worked out all the kinks. What I was saying was that there's been so many time travel stories. What is involved in creating a time travel story that is completely fresh and different like this one?
Can you hear me? Yes.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes.
I mean, that is the trick, right? It is so complicated to do time travel. I think anybody who's ever written a time travel piece or watched a time travel piece and loved it, it's so complicated, and it's like you need like a degree in astrophysics to, you know, to just kind of like sort it out. So there's a lot of fun is, I think, the main thing that we in the writer's room, you know, tried to like sort of approach it with, like, and heart, I think, was like the thread of our time travel magic or rules or whatever, is sort of Nikki's heart. I want to give a shout out to the other writers in the room, Blue Beckford, Louis Joyce, and Natalia Yanchuk, and of course, Adam Staffaroni. But because it was a real puzzle, and I think what we tried to do is we tried to make it a coming of age story that sort of follows one thread of a girl who's trying to find herself and fix her shit, and and that just happens to, you know, sort of deal with time travel stuff. So what does that look like when, you know, you're living now and you're having trouble with your parents, but that goes back in time as well, you know, so.
Cool.
Well, what was it like working with a writer's room? I mean, I know you just touched on this a little bit, but does it work the same way it does with TV, with podcasts? Is it different because it's an audio medium?
I mean, I don't know. It was my first time being in a writer's room, really. I mean, I'd done one little one for one day. For an animated thing once, but and this was the first time that I was the head writer, you know. But it was super fun. I mean, usually when I write, I'm by myself, and so it was amazing to be in a room with, you know, Louis and Natalia and Blue and Adam, and just like have other people to shoot the shit with about the story. And so that was incredible. I loved engaging with all of their brains. Everybody had 50 million great ideas that we couldn't put in the show because otherwise it would have been like 112 episodes. For me, it was super fun. I mean, I have a lot of friends that work in Hollywood. I mean, I live in California, and you know, I definitely had heard some tales and stuff. But for me, this was just like, and I hope the other writers felt like this too, that it was just a super fun puzzle piece to tease out.
Cool.
Yeah. I was curious what you see as the age range for the show. Like, mm-hmm. I think a lot of your stuff is YA, but not all ages necessarily, but any age. Yeah, I think you aim for allowing it for anybody. Do you feel like this fits into the same sort of thing?
I mean, I definitely do. I mean, I think it's called YA, but I think it's perfectly appropriate for like an 8 or 9 year old to listen to, because especially because kids like to like sort of read up or listen up, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's real family friendly in that sense. And yeah, I do feel like I always aim, even though I might be categorized in like one category, I try to always make it so that anybody could pick it up. I mean, Shifting Earth is definitely more an adult, you know, adult book. Shade the Changing Girl, was for mature readers, but I think it was perfectly appropriate for a teenager. And the Star Wars that I'm doing now, like Star Wars Hyperspace, it's technically all ages so that kids can read it, but even with my Princess Leia novel, I tried to make it so that a kid would feel like they were reading a little too above their reading level, and an adult would feel mm-hmm. like they weren't being talked down to. So, yeah. Wow. I write for people. I think
it sounds like you've got a lot of amazing things going on. How do you wear all these different nerdy hats? Do you dedicate certain hours of your day to Star Wars and certain to, you know, like it's a pretty impressive collection you just spat out there.
I've got all, my heart is like separated into many small corners, and it's like a geography of my nerd heart is in there. Yeah. I mean, I just love stories and I love telling them, and it's pretty fun to get to play in some pretty kick-ass sandboxes, and then to also do, you know, to come up with my own stuff. That's kind of like, for me, living the dream is to get to do both.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we talk about Shifting Earth a little bit, because this is, like you said, it definitely skews older than Nikki Fix. I keep wanting to say Nikki Bix, and that's wrong. And I know it's wrong, but it keeps sticking in my head. But Shifting Earth definitely skews a little bit older. But there's some big ideas you're dealing with here in terms of just at the baseline sci-fi level of parallel Earths. But it's almost this eco-thriller in terms of taking some very dark looks about what potentially could happen with our Earth or a Earth out there. Where did the germ of the idea start for this?
I mean, this is kind of like my pandemic baby, you know, Karen Berger and I, the amazing Karen Berger.
Oh yeah.
And I had had lunch, I think a week before lockdown to like, we'd always sort of wanted to work with each other. And then the lockdown happened. And all of a sudden I was thinking about food and gardening, and I was scrapping seeds. Like, I'd make a tomato salad and then I would save the seeds and then plant them, you know, to grow tomatoes. Anything that was in my kitchen, I was like, my friend who's a gardener was like, you can regrow everything. I was like, all right, put it in the ground, you know? And then also, like, there were the fires, and so there was a lot of, you know, it looked like Mars in Los Angeles because of the smoke. Oh, and so that just got me really thinking. And I think just being locked in the house and with fires outside and trying to think about food security, I just started thinking about, like, where could I go, you know? And sort of writing this parallel Earth story just kind of seemed like a natural sort of way of escapism, but then also, you know, talking about something that's really important, which is the climate crisis, and sort of what would you do if you were faced with a way to solve a problem, but also realizing that there are other problems to be solved. And I think that, like, one of the things that there is in when we think about the climate crisis is, you know, a lot of people feel really hopeless and stuff, and they think, well, when, you know, we should have done something 50 years ago. Why, you know, what's the point of doing it now? But I think every single scientist, every single climate activist, every single climate person thinks like, well, you can do something today. Today is the day you can start doing something, you know? And so I really wanted it to be a conversation piece about sort of the little actions that we might be able to take to, you know, think about making a hopeful future.
Nice.
I not to get too much into spoilers, but reading this book, like you're intimating a little bit here, it takes place, or at least part of it takes place at the beginning in, I believe, 2042. Mm. And a lot of the things that people are doing, from wearing masks to being worried about social media and the environment and what the repercussions are going to be, it feels like this small, very logical step, to the point that it was very stressful to read, frankly, when there's things like the sun has sunspots and they're starting to darken out and people are like, oh man, there goes the sun again. And yeah, I can't imagine if it was stressful for me to read. Was it stressful for you to write on the same level?
Well, I mean, definitely. I mean, when you start sort of digging into what a near future Earth, you know, could look like in our reality, if we don't do anything, you know, or even if we do something, I mean, just think about the weather events that are happening constantly now, you know, or the fact that, like, you know, we don't, you know, that we really need to, the amount of seeds, you know, are not as robust as they were before, as biodiverse as they were before, and that, you know, we're trying to sort of reclaim that, rewild, you know, all of those things. It does get pretty depressing, but I think one of the jobs of science fiction is to think about hopeful futures, right? I mean, in a way, Nikki Fix is about that too, right? It's like about trying to, you know, fix your shit, right? And and so I think that they're, you know, they're kind of they're like in that way, and I think that science fiction does that really well. It allows you to take topics that are timely, right? With Nikki Fix, it's talking about sort of like finding your own voice, I think, and thinking about the pressures of you know, this technology age that we live in, with the algorithm and stuff like that, and how do you find your unique self in that sort of world? And you know, and with Shifting Earth, it's about trying to figure out how to think of a, you know, hopeful future when we've set up this this environment, you know, for ourselves. And I think that what science fiction does really well is to make us think about these contemporary issues, you know, in a sort of safe way with a psychic distance, because it's, and I think one of the jobs of science fiction as well is to think about, I think with Shifting Earth is, you know, I don't call it, this isn't my term, it's someone else's term, but like the idea of hope punk, where rather than like being like, well, everything is horrible and it's completely grim and apocalyptic and we messed up, we fucked it up and that's it, it's over, you know, that there's this hopelessness there. But to try to imagine science fiction stories where there are seeds, pun intended, of hope, so that we can imagine a hopeful future, you know, because I think that science fiction can help us to imagine ways out of our dire situations.
Yeah. I think this is a question for you from the comments. This is from Derek Mainhart. Are there other authors working in a similar vein that you're reading?
I mean, I think that there are a lot. I would really recommend Matt Bell's book, Appleseed. It's brilliant. I would recommend pretty much anything by Cory Doctorow. You know, Cory is a good friend, and he always talks about how, like, you know, people imagine that at the end or in some big major event that, you know, people will sit on their porch with a gun. But what if you imagine that you would go over to your neighbor's house with a cake instead, you know? And and that's what I like. So, yeah, so I think those are good people. I think Devin Grayson did a, you know, did a book also with Karen Berger that sort of, you know, talks about, it's called Rewild, I think, and it's like talking about rewilding. Eden Lapucky, she has a book called California. Sherielle Smith, a book called Orleans. There's a lot of there's a lot of things. You know, it's interesting because I was trying, I've been seeing a question, any comics climate. Yeah, I would say Rewild. You know, there's a lot right now in literature, and in comics, it's not, there's not as many. There are some, but there's not as many. There, and of course, I don't have like my list with me. But I did do a panel at San Diego Comic-Con that had a couple of books on it about this topic. But it was a little bit. I could have like a million literary authors come and do that panel, but it was hard finding comics. I think that's going to change because this is something we're all dealing with. But yeah, sorry if that didn't answer your question, Nat Townsend.
Well, why, I mean, not to put you on the spot here with specifically this, but why do you think comics isn't necessarily doing a good job of tackling this? Is it that these are complex topics and comics, and this is not to be dismissive of comics on our comic book club show that we've been doing for a while, but tends to deal with things broadly just because of the limited nature of the amount of panels you have versus the words you could put in a prose book? Or is there another reason?
I think it's just trends, you know, like people get into, I think comics sometimes deals with topics better than literature does. And it, you know, and they're never exactly the same at the same exact time. And so I think it's a matter of, I don't want to say serious comics because that's the wrong word, but, literary comics or I don't know, you know, whatever. But I mean, people deal with it. I mean, it's not like we're not dealing with it. I mean, look at, you know, Poison Ivy. I mean, that's or Swamp Thing. Those are climate change, you know, books as well. So I think that we are in comics constantly dealing with it. It's just through a different lens. And I think that the fact that right now, maybe there aren't as many as in literature or, you know, like prose, just means that it's just a biorhythm. It's just like it will be there. It will come.
Mm-hmm. Maybe the problem is using all of that ink and materials to create comics about climate change when you're going to knock down a couple of trees to do it.
But like, you're going to do the same with books too, right? With novels.
Well, let's go from science fiction to fantasy science fiction with Star Wars. Like you mentioned, you've been working that world before, but you've been writing these really fun stories for IDW, right?
It's
is the
Dark
one
Horse.
That's putting these out?
Dark Horse.
Okay. The property is all over the place. Yeah. So I keep messing it up. But talk about this book a little bit. What's it been like writing these all ages Star Wars stories?
Well, it's super fun. So it's a series called Star Wars Hyperspace. And it's three writers who are writing it. It's me, Amanda Diebert, and Michael Morrissey. And all the stories take place in many different eras, and they're not in order of era. So it's, you know, issue one, which was by Amanda, was Obi-Wan and Anakin, and at that time, and then. And then issue two and three, which were mine, are, you know, Leia and Luke between Star Wars and Empire and Poe and Finn. And so, you know, they're all over the place. Some hero pairings, some villain pairings. And the fun thing about it is that there's an interconnected story with all of them. So if you were to put at the end the story in time order, you would get a little thread of a sort of B story that's sort of threaded throughout.
Cool. Wow.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. We read a couple of them and they are super fun and they're fun to read. It's nice to know that there's a little bit of a continuity thing going on there. On that note though, even though they are these all-ages stories, I'm sure there has to be a little bit of checking going on with Lucasfilm and the greater universe and the place that things fall in. What's that coordination like?
Oh, I mean, it's super fun. I mean, sometimes, you know, sometimes it's like I get confused in my eras. You know, even though I'm a big Star Wars nerd, I'm like, you know, I name something the wrong thing because it's like, well, it's not that at this point, it's that at this point, and, you know, all of that. So it's kind of cool to get notes from like deep dive like notes from story group and stuff. And then it was really fun to come up with the threaded story with Amanda and Michael. But it's interesting because I think part of the job with Star Wars Hyperspace is to be in the world and, you know, and move the characters forward in their sort of deepen their relationships with each other, and stuff. But, am I there? Am I here?
Yes, you're there. You went a little herky jerky for a second, but you're all
good. Yeah, I'm getting a weird thing that's like.
Oh no. Uh-oh. Things have gone horribly wrong. Oh, we can't hear you now. Here, tell you what, I'm going to... Here, try taking out your headphones and putting them back in again. Here. Pete, how are you doing?
Oh, good. Thanks for asking. She was right in the middle of a point. That's a tough time to freeze up.
Pete, while we're waiting, there was a question about, this is for Cecil, about favorite Star Wars show, movie, or comic book. Do you have one?
Yeah, I do. Thanks for asking. Yeah. I mean, you know, I noticed since Andor has, kind of finished its first season, everybody's been ranking the Star Wars TV shows, and I'm definitely in the minority because I put The Mandalorian really high up there, and then everybody's putting Andor up there as like, you know, Justin thinks it's the greatest Star Wars TV show,
and his opinion's important, I guess.
Am I back?
You are.
Yes, you're. I think you're getting an echo. Maybe your headphones are out.
No, they're not out. I don't really. I'm so sorry, guys.
Oh,
I don't
really know what happened.
It's everything just sort of like said I had to force quit everything, and I was like, what the hell is happening? So I did, but then it wouldn't let me join because it said I was already here. Anyway,
well, we're definitely getting my echo, which is fine.
Okay. Hold on. Let me try again. Is this better?
There we go.
Yes.
Yes, it is. There we go. We figured it out. Live tech support.
I am so sorry. And I will just sum up by saying Star Wars is fun.
There you go. Excellent. Well, I did have a question for you. There's a little bit of a swerve, but to take it like all the way back, I think the first time we had you on the show was to talk about Plain Janes and the launch of Biggs. At the time, that was something where DC and Marvel were like, what if we served different audiences? Wouldn't that be interesting? Let's try that out. We are now, as we talked about at the beginning of the show, well over a decade out by that point, and things have changed considerably. I know this is a very broad question, but because you have been writing in this sort of genre is the wrong word, but in this mode all along, as well as different modes like we were talking about, how have things changed? Have they changed for the better? Have they progressed, do you think? Or have they gone backwards from that point when Minx launched?
Oh my gosh. I mean, it's so much better. I mean, when Minx launched, right? We're right now in a golden age of kids comics and young adult comics. And comics in general. But I mean, really, that is just like, just to taken over. I mean, it's just a plethora. Any kind of book that you want, you can get. It's robust. It's diverse. It's amazing. When Minx came out, Plain Janes, which I did with Jim Rugg, the fabulous Jim Rugg, you know, Barnes & Noble and Borders, which was at the time, and bookstores, they wouldn't put the books in the young adult section. They put them all together with the adult graphic novels. So kids couldn't find them. Libraries didn't have sort of the understanding yet of how to curate their collections because there wasn't really a lot of young adult books. Raina Telmiger's Smile hadn't come out yet. So it really was like just very difficult because the infrastructure to support young adult comics wasn't really there. And my gosh, has it changed? And now it is there, and now it's like only there, you know, and it's incredible, you know. So the landscape has changed incredibly, and I think it's 100% for the better, and I think it can only get better, and I think that, you know, we're seeing that betterment come to all of comics, you know, not just to, you know, original graphic novels or young adult graphic novels, but, you know, comics for adults, comics for, you know, superhero comics, Star Wars comics. It's just a whole brand new world, and it's incredible, and I love it, and I can't wait to make more of them.
Yay.
Awesome. Well, on that note, I know we've mentioned a couple of things that you have currently coming out or that previously came out, but what else do you want to plug? What else should people be checking out from you, either that's running now or coming up soon?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, I love all my books. I would say, I mean, I don't know. Have you read any of my stuff in the past 20 years or whatever?
Okay. Well, I mean, we definitely talked about Shane the Changing Girl and Shane the Changing Woman quite a bit when that was coming out, which was great.
That was
I know we've read a lot more stuff. I'm going to open it up because we read so many books.
I would say, okay. So recently, I mean, a book that I love is Soupy Leaves Home, which, if you don't know, is about a girl who rides the rails as a hobo in Depression-era America. That's with Jose Pimenta. And that just was a book really near and dear to my heart. Me and Jim Rugg finally got to finish The Plain Janes. That came out in 2020, of course. So, but we, you know, it was collected as, you know, book one and two came out on Minx, but we got the rights back and Little Brown put out an omnibus of book one, two, and we finally finished it with book three. Female Furies, which I did with Adriana Mello, which was, you know, kind of a look at, what would the Me Too movement and a feminist awakening look like on Apocalypse with the Female Furies. I am excited about that. I just did Yasha Nadorian's origin story for Critical Role for the Mighty Nine. And that was super fun. Cool. What else have I done? I don't know. Other things. Batgirl.
You did some Batgirl. Yeah, I was going to say that, which was great.
Yeah. And that I'm really proud of because I think it's issue 47. It was part of the Joker War. And, you know, they had the Joker knocking on Barbara Gordon's door. And that was the cover that I was given, and it was hard. Thank you, Jessica Chen, who was the editor, and me and Robbie Rodriguez and Jessica kind of like decided to have that issue be a sort of call and response to The Killing Joke, and have Barbara reframe the way that she sort of like deals with the Joker coming through her door again. And so I'm fiercely proud of that.
That's awesome.
I remember that issue. And I think one of the things that was wonderful about that, which I know you were just touching on here, is that that's become, I think rightly so, a very controversial moment in comics. So to have this and reframe it in a way that felt more responsible for a modern era, I thought was great to see. So I was very happy to see that issue as well.
Yeah, thank you. And yeah, it was really nice too, because Robbie really, tried to do some panel layouts that echo Killing Joke in a way, you know. So it really was a call and response.
Yeah. Well, Cecil, it was so good seeing you again. It was so good chatting again. Thank you so much for hopping on. Again, all the stuff is great. I really, really loved Shifting Earth, even though it stressed me out a ton. It's a beautifully done book, and I think everybody should read it. And Nikki Fix's Time Mix, the 7th episode just came out, 8th episode coming out soon, 12 episodes total. And you can get it wherever you get podcasts, right?
Yeah, iHeartRadio, I think, is the kind of default place. But yeah. Go check it out. It's a romp in time.
Ooh, fun.
Excellent. Cecil, thank you so much for coming on. It was a pleasure.
Take care.
Have a great night.
Thank you so much. Right. Keep up the great work. Thank you.
All right. There we go. Once again, that was Cecil Castellucci and iHeart's Nikki Fix's Time Mix, which is great. You can check that out on podcast platforms. Also, Shifting Earth from Dark Horse and Burger Books. That came out August 10th, so that is available everywhere. You should check it out right now because it is awesome. And now we are going to move to our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in Q&A here on Crowdcast. Also, I believe JT Sizzle is here, so I'm going to invite him onto the main stage. You can also drop a question in the comments over on YouTube. I'll keep an eye on those. Or you can do it, hello, how are you, Justin? Or you can do it in the comments on Facebook, I guess, if you're over there or whatever's going on. Justin, how are you doing? What are you drinking tonight? What's going on?
Oh, wow, right into it. I've got some more Labatt's. Big deal.
Oh, yeah, man.
So that's fun. I just caught the very end of that interview. Sounded great.
Apologies, yeah, she's amazing, man. We haven't seen her in a while.
We've known her forever, though.
Yeah.
Back in the day, we interviewed her several times.
Yeah, she's great.
And that's why you avoided the interview, because you didn't...
I think we've covered that ground. No, I'm just kidding. I just was late from work coming home because it is the season to really grind it out. That's what it's all about, right?
Yeah.
If you say so.
Pete, what about you? What are you drinking tonight?
Oh, man, I'm having a refreshing Zadie's Lager. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Straight from my brother's fridge. Just be cool about it. Just be cool.
Yeah. Nice. Still working on the Shifting Earth, which is really delicious. Everybody should check it out. Brett did a really good job with this.
Oh, yeah.
Stray Bully's killing it, as usual.
He doesn't stop.
Curious what this is going to look like. I'm going to bring up a question here while I have an overlay. Maybe I'll have to take that off. But here we go. Oh my gosh, so smooth. Two-part question. If you were suddenly trapped in a parallel Earth with two moons, do you think you'd eat dinner or supper? And would Justin still be late to the show?
Yes.
Yeah, I can catch some shit here.
That's right, as you should. Catching
dinner
shit's
versus,
all about.
Dinner versus supper? Dinner is what you eat sort of nowish. Supper's when you're having a late night snack, is what I say.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought, like, I don't know, supper seemed like something fancier people said. I don't know. Maybe I'm just wrong.
That could be true.
I always thought supper was less fancy, honestly. I always thought supper, whenever I picture supper, I picture, like, Bob Cratchit and Tiny Tim and their little shack house being like, we're just eating some soup for supper and we're happy about everything.
Yeah, supper's just like dinner. Yeah. Supper's just like dinner, but you eat it out of a dog bowl on the floor.
But yes, to answer the second part of the question, absolutely, Justin would still be late. Let's move over to a question from YouTube. This is from Frederico Rosa. Given the amount of comics you guys read for the show, what makes you come back to a comic and how often do you do it? I think the short answer is it's as often as I send the comic to you guys, but what's the actual...
Well, I also think, you know, like, certain comics will make more noise, you know, like if we, you know, if we kind of pick something up and really like it, but sometimes, you know, like if we go away from a comic and then all of a sudden it picks up steam or people start talking about it, we'll go back to it. You know, we're trying to give the people what they want, and we're also trying to make sure that we're, you know, covering the hits, covering the things that other people seem to be, you know, point out, like, this is cool, check it out. So that's the answer for me, at least.
Some people trust the algorithm, and we trust the Alex-go-rhythm. That's right. Which is where the comics come from. Alex is our fire hose of straight fire comics. But what keeps me coming back, I mean, I get excited the same way I did with the first stack of comic books I ever read stuffed into my stocking, like, you know, 25, 30 years ago. It's just like I'm into these characters, a great art, great story. In the stack, we're going to talk about a ton of great comics tomorrow that will keep me coming back for more.
Yeah, it's all about the STB.
Super Tight Bananas. Now available as a t-shirt on comicbookclub.threadless.com. Check it out. Give us a very tiny bit of money. We actually don't get most of that money. But if you want to get a shirt, have a good time. We got another question here from Crowdcast. This is from Kevin. What are some of your faves from early adulthood, not childhood, that you're afraid to revisit because they might not hold up? Ooh, I'd say Wakanda Forever is one.
What the fuck?
Wow.
That's awful.
I'm kidding.
It's Wakanda Forever.
Oh, my goodness. You are like Todd on She-Hulk, Pete. I've wanted to say that for weeks. Todd on She-Hulk, when he does the Wakanda Forever thing and they make fun of him, you've been doing it earnestly and for real.
Exactly. Big Todd energy. Yeah. Something we've always said. Faves from early adulthood that you're afraid to revisit.
I mean, I will say legitimately Lost is the one that I'm most afraid to revisit. Do not say anything. I know what you're going to say, Justin, because you don't like it as much as I do. But that's one that I loved so much when it was coming out that I am scared to revisit it and definitely hit, like, I know there's a span of episodes in the middle that, like, just do not work.
Turns out, rightly so, I think, on that one. That's a worthwhile fear.
Here's the thing I will say. Like, I did end up rewatching the pilot a year and a half ago, just absolutely randomly. And it's phenomenal. Like, yeah, it's still pilot, so good, that first episode. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to watch one episode a year and kind of space it out that way. And it'll be real good.
I don't think that's I think it's because the pilot, they knew what they were doing. And then in almost every episode after that, they were like, I don't know, let's write something crazy. We'll never have to answer these questions.
Great. I think I'm still going to love it.
We can have this fight in our weekly Lost podcast where we fight about this over and over again. It's called Comic Book Club. in the comments, people talking about revisiting Sandman, I was just staying out of town for Thanksgiving, and they had a whole drawer of like a cabinet full of the Sandman trades. I reread the some of those, especially the Inn at the Edge of the World, and those hold up. Just, they're two of my favorite Sandman issues are in there. The one about Prez, the president, and the other about the guy who falls into a city's dream. Those stories have left such a mark on me, so it's great to reread those. They definitely hold up.
I would say Death's Head was one of those ones where, as a young adult, I thought it was the coolest, but I'm scared to actually go back and, you know, every once in a while he pops up and stuff like that, and it's fun, but I'm worried that maybe those other ones don't hold up.
You know, I'm going to say for the comic that I am afraid to revisit is some of the larger crossover stuff from like 15 years ago. Like, I'm curious, rereading Final Crisis, if I would like that more or less. What about Kingdom Come? Does that still hold up? Those ones feel
comics is something that, and this is probably just a function of us doing the show, but I do not mind revisiting it at all, even if it lets me down. I always find it very interesting when we go back and review something, even that we have reviewed over the span of this show, because we had one opinion at one point based on a variety of factors. Now, all these years later, other things have happened. We've hopefully grown as people and changed as reviewers. And again, whenever we do it, I think it's really, really interesting to do, even if the thing does not hold up at all.
Yeah, at some point, we just have to start over and just redo all the podcasts we've done so far, right?
Wow. Oh, great. That's good. Pete will love that.
Yeah.
Why don't we move to a question from YouTube?
The tube?
Here we go. This is from John Dorsey. All right, boys, let's get into it. Your favorite creative team, including colorists. So Miller and Varley would qualify, but it's more common for it to be three people. It doesn't have to be, though.
Including colorists.
Colorists.
We might have to do some light research.
We're bad at that. We are very bad at that. Well, I mean, I was just going to say, like John Romita Jr. and Klaus Janson usually work together, right?
Yeah,
that's a good call. I'm sorry if I could not mention which colorist they usually work with, but I know they usually work together very well. So they're very good. That's my answer.
Nice. Pete, anything coming for you? I mean, I could hit on some of the favorites with like the classic James Robinson, Tony Harris, Starman team. I think that's such distinctive work. Chris Bocciolo, I think, is someone who really elevates.
That was what I was going to say.
There. Really? You were going to say that?
Yeah, I am a huge Bocciolo fan. You know that.
Yeah, no, it's true. King,
that Doctor Strange run was like just so worth it for the art alone.
Nice.
Great. Good three-person team, mind? That one person.
Yep.
Yeah. Nat Townsend says Chris Samnee with Javier Rodriguez on colors. That's a good one. Derek took the one I was about to say, which is the Allreds, Mike Allred and Laura Allred, great together. I'll just throw out there also the Dodsons, great team. I mean, that's easy because they're always working together, but they're really good too. Justin, what were you going
to
say though?
I was going to throw out Moon Knight, jump to mind, sort of that that Jordi Belair was working on.
I thought you were going to say his three personalities working together.
I mean, I love that too. That was heavily featured in that run. The three of us collaborating.
Oh, wow.
It's my fave. All right, here we go. We got another one over here on Crowncast. Re-climate change. It feels like comics often handle real issues better allegorically than literally. Why do you think this is? Am I totally wrong? Any counterexamples?
Ooh, nice. I think that's 100% correct. I feel like comics, I don't know what to sort of pin it on, but don't do a great job of sort of dealing frankly with real world issues. And I think it's because comics are about escape, fantasy, a heightened reality. So when they come at something that is like trying to make a point, it feels a little put upon the story. But when you come at it as a metaphor or allegorically, I think it can really work because that's what comics do best.
Also, there's, you know, comics are still in the business of selling comics. And there are these people who you have to pitch things to that are like, that idea will never work. You know what I mean? So it's hard to kind of get all that kind of through the system a little bit, if you will.
Well, let me throw something out to you guys that I'm not even completely sold on as a issue at all.
Well, then don't say it then.
No, but I think it's something that crops up all the time is that comics and superheroes do things allegorically and they present issues allegorically and then people 100% misinterpret them and run in absolutely the wrong direction. I think not to take it away from comics, but like Star Wars fandom deals with this a lot. And I've even seen a lot of the stuff pop up with Andor in particular, where people are like, you know, the Empire was actually pretty efficient with that prison. Now that I think of it, you're like, what are you doing? No, stop that. And it's the same thing with like all of these conversations about, well, get your politics out of my comics. Stop putting politics in your Captain America comics. The guy who walks around wearing an American flag all the time. So what do you think about that? Do comics need to be even more blunt to get the messages through? Do they need to stay at the same level allegorically? Because honestly, these people are idiots anyway. Or what's your take on this?
I feel like that we're not trying to get our news from comics. I think the best way for a comic to make a point, I know Pete is,
a lot
of news coming out of the hand.
Yeah, time to open up my old Punisher newspaper.
Guns, the Punisher still Gazette. but I think they can be really instructive in changing people's like ways of thinking about the world or the way they take care of other people. I mean, that's such the hero story is all about reaching out and taking care of the people around you in most cases. So I think getting into issues that way is a way that we can actually take lessons from comics without having to be mad about the specifics through a political lens.
Yeah, but also there's this idea of once something is out there, it's not really, you know, yours anymore. It belongs to the people, and however they're going to interpret that, that's their right, right? You know, if I buy a song or buy a movie or whatever it is, and I kind of feel a certain way about it or a certain connection, that is kind of my truth or my, you know, reality. And it can be very wrong, and I can mishear words, or a lot of the times I'm not listening to lyrics. So it can be this thing about, you know, things kind of taking on a different life or hitting people differently depending on where they are in their life. So, I mean, things can start one way and then evolve into something else. And I don't know if that's wrong or not, you know.
Well, I think it's like, it's like when I downloaded Ted Lasso and made it about him not believing in the team.
Oh, wow.
I really
reinforced strong that. Stance. Strong stance.
He touches it. It says, don't believe.
Yeah.
Something from Nat here. He says, what was Civil War an allegory for? I believe it was an allegory for Iron Man and Captain America fighting, was the idea there. Like,
that's true.
You know? Yeah. Wow. It was a good metaphor.
It's about it was a metaphor dad's for gun fighting, control. You don't like
is
it,
what it was. Gun control and terrorism. There you go. We got one more here. This is from Nelson Martinez over on YouTube. I'm curious if you guys checked out the Guardians of the Holiday Special. Thoughts? I'm going to check it out tomorrow. I will mention we actually have a Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special.
Oh, you taped that? You taped that, guys?
We did.
Oh, man.
We taped that. Oh. It's up in the Marvel Vision feed. Pete, though, so you can get me and Justin's thought on it. But Pete, you want to do a bonus episode right now? What did you think of the holiday special?
Oh, it was great. I had a lot of fun. I laughed, saw it with my family, thought it was really, you know, I got a little choked up. Kevin Bacon coming through hard there, you know. You know, sometimes you got to dress up your brother like an alien so he can jam out with you. I thought it was super sweet. I did want a little Gamora in there, so I was sad that that didn't happen. But I thought it was just a great kind of 40-minute, like, holiday special. You know what I mean? It was
that
silly,
is what it was.
Fun, you know. I thought it was great.
Wouldn't you wanted Gamora like, as a ghost of Christmas past?
No, I want, you know, I want them to get back together, you know, it's breaking my heart.
That's Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. You'll get Gamora of her there. You got
Galessa. Oh, boy. Wow.
And this.
Yeah. We get it. You're a dad. You don't have to show off.
The Grinch who punned Christmas over here.
Oh, boy.
Don't like it. All right, and that is it for the audience questions. We're going to move to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
Pete the Page.
All right. This is the part where we give back you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free towards a gift card to Midtown Comics Online or, of course, Long John Silver's. Yeah. Because why wouldn't we also give people an opportunity to... What happened, Zelvin? Did you just, you got stoned and walked by Long John Silver's and just thrown money around and got a bunch of gift cards? Like, how did this all go down?
No, it was a thing that happened on the show, Pete.
Yeah, it happened very organically.
Here for it. Man, I should start paying attention.
They should do a combination Pizza Hut Taco Bell for Midtown Comics and Long John Silver.
Oh, man, yeah. Then I could call you from there.
Yeah.
So, yes, as it says in the little Chiron there, if anybody wants to participate, raise your hand here on Crowdcast and we can pull you into the stream. Or if you're on YouTube, just type me.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
It's
or
the same
Facebook,
way they do it at Wheel of Fortune. Yeah. Yeah, why are you excluding
Or you
Facebook
guys could
now?
Battle it out and we give it to a charity. There's also
we're on a screen. Zuckerberg. We're on a screen right now in the metaverse somewhere. And those folks are cheering. They're screaming for their own. I want to do trivia, Alex. You got to speak to the meta. Like,
legs. We have legs, baby.
Yep. They definitely have legs and all their limbs are connected. Joke.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, since we're not getting anybody here.
Well, Derek's going to do it.
Oh, Derek's going to do it? Derek's going
to
do it.
He's not just here the heart of the show. He's the main heart of the show. Please welcome to the Rectangles, Derek Mainhart.
Nope, don't do it yet. Still got to do something.
Okay. Oh, we got to do something?
All right.
Yeah, process, Alex?
Oh, well, we're going to kick out Justin and welcome Derek, I guess.
Oh, nice.
What? Is it a zero-sum game?
It seems fair.
Yeah.
That's been Pete's dream about trivia for years. Last week we couldn't get Nat out, and now you're making me leave?
Yeah.
Nat raised his hand. Nat raised his hand.
No,
I raised my hand.
There was enough of Nat. We're over Natted.
Put me in the wing.
Yeah. I invited Derek on stage. I don't know how any of this works. So I'm just going to drink my drink. It's still...
Hello?
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 Derek.
Derek.
Am I here?
Hey, put in we some can headphones, hear you. Derek. Yes.
I can't. Can you see me? It's probably better if you don't see me.
Okay. Wow. Oh, that's fine. Put in. You got headphones in?
I do not have headphones. Hang on.
Okay, put in some headphones. Otherwise, we're going to get this terrible echo.
Oh, this might be a problem.
Uh-oh.
Oh, this is fun.
You know what? I'm not going to talk. Pete's going to take it away.
All right. Derek, you're still with us?
I've read everything.
No, you're good. Is that how I sound?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what your voice sounds like.
It's weird, right? No. It's a weird voice.
All right.
Derek's here's what making, I'm going to do. He's building headphones out of...
he's building headphones out of coconuts and string. Right, this is fine. Pete, just take it away.
Yeah, sure. This echo's not driving me insane.
How about this, Derek? Why don't you mute and then until you answer, and then answer unmuted?
Here, I just muted it.
Wow.
Okay.
How dare you? Answer in the
How
comments.
Dare you mute unmute, an audience unmute yourself. Yeah. All right. Here we go. Today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend, Irene Cara, R.I.P. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. What is the name of the DC event coming out in 2023? Is it A, Night Terrors, B, Somewhat Beefy, or C, Maureen Teefy?
What?
Yep. So,
should I just type them in? Or...
Yeah, you got it right.
Is it better by?
There we go.
Yes.
I'll unmute Derek. Derek, I'll unmute you when you're ready to answer. How about that?
All right, here we go.
So you got the first one.
Question number two. Who is versus Archie in the new one-shot coming out in January of 2023? Archie versus blank. Is it A, Batman, B, the world, or C, Richard Belzer? So we know we want it to be C, but maybe the world?
I would love to see Richard Belzer. Let's go A, though.
Or B, the world.
Or B.
B is B correct. B. Yeah, of course.
All right,
Here we go. Last one. Planet Hulk Worldbreaker number one is set to take place how many years in the future? Is it A, 1,000, B, a shit ton, or is it C, Carol Massenberg? Hmm. So it's either A, 1,000, which is the only one that makes sense.
Well, how much is a shit ton, technically?
I don't know.
It's 1,000.
Let's go with 1,000.
1,000 is correct. Well done.
All right, and would you like a gift card to Midtown Comics or Long John Silver's?
Well, since it's Giving Tuesday, can I donate my Long John Silver's gift card to charity?
Yes, but it's still going to be a Long John Silver's card.
How about to the American Heart Association for the Long John Silver's gift card?
Nice. All right,
we'll do that. Thank you, Derek. I'm going to take you off of the stage because this echo is terrible.
Sorry.
That's all right. Great talking with you.
Not your fault. It is the fault of Crowdcast. But there you go. You too can win these fabulous prizes. We are, as we all know.
Well, I just wanted to quickly just.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you got a secret thing. Go ahead.
Yeah. And of course, Kevin was right. It is the 1980 hit Fame.
Yes.
Incredible. Now, as we all know, new comic books are coming out every week. What are you guys looking forward to?
Oh, it's our big section, What's in Stores This Week.
Yeah.
Listen, man, I'm trying to work some stuff, okay?
It's true. This is a great new section.
Who's
Pete, what's in stores this week?
All right, great. I'm going to
get a microwave or like an air popper. Or...
I'm looking forward to Rogue Sun number 8.
Planet Hulk, a world breaker number one. And I'm sorry for murdering this, but is it Kolshi? Kolashi? In Hell, number one of four, the Hellboy. I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's a banger for sure.
We got a banger.
Justin, what about
you?
What are you looking forward to?
I got to give it up for a little comic that I'm calling Blue Beetle Graduation Day number one. Blue Beetle, a character I haven't read a lot of lately, and I really like. I saw someone talking about how Blue Beetle is the Spider-Man of the DC Universe, and he truly is. I wish we got more Blue Beetle. This is a welcome addition to the stack this week.
I will throw out there the thing that I was most excited to check out this week was Star Trek number two from IDW Publishing. The first issue of that just crushed it. I think, Justin, you described it as like the Avengers Infinity War, Avengers Endgame of Star Trek books.
Everybody comes together. It's great.
Everybody comes together. Absolutely wild. Very excited to check out the second issue. And all of those are going to be in our Stack podcast that pubs Wednesday, 9 a.m.
Pubs.
In the
pubs.
Feed or the dedicated Stack Feed listener.
Hey, we're closing out our What's New in Stores segment with What Pubs This Week. That's us here at Comic Book Club. The Alexgorithm is strong tonight.
And that is it for this week's show. We would like to thank Cecil Castellucci for coming on. Don't forget to check out iHeart's Nikki Fixes Time Mix on all podcast platforms. Also, Shifting Earth from Dark Horse and Burger Books, which is out now, as well as everything else that she has written, which is always awesome. Next week, John Dunning is going to be here from Dark Horse Comics Wiper to talk about that. Also, a bunch of other stuff to check out. The Doom Room, our Doom Patrol podcast, is rapidly finishing up season three and gearing up for season four.
Jump in the room.
Also, Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast. As mentioned, we have our Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special recap, and we're going to be going back to doing phase two and phase three recaps with some special guests, which should be very fun. So check that out in that podcast feed. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe and follow on Apple, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice. At Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Good night. Take care of yourself. And good luck, we say.